You had any experience of desert islands?
Well, yes, I've been through the Pacific 3 times. I've seen desert islands from the ship and from the plane, and been in Fiji and Canton Island, Hawaii. Not quite the kind of desert island we're talking about there.
But you've got a vague idea of the feeling of a desert island.
Deserted, hot, and the noise of the sea on the reef.
Well, the loneliness of the long-distance runner is well known, especially to you. How do you think you could face the indefinite loneliness of a desert island?
Well, I think I would be pretty lonely because I miss all my friends, but on the other hand, at times I'm always alone when I'm running a long way, so I'm more or less trained to a certain extent, but I think I'd be very lonely.
And what do you want these records to do for you on the desert island? Evoke the past, or just pass the time away, or give
well,
you
I
hope
think
for the future?
Yes, some of each. They evoke memories, moods, and hopes. I think that's putting it briefly.
What's the first one you've got there?
Well, I've got this wonderful record of Norrie Paramore's The Very Thought of You.
And what does that do?
Well, Shirley, that's my wife and myself, heard a lot of this record when we're on our extended honeymoon in Australia. And it always brings back nostalgic memories.
Paramore and his orchestra, The Very Thought of You. What's your second choice, Gordon?
Well, I've chosen a record which reminds me of England. I think marching soldiers and sort of raising the flag. I mean, that's at the athletics, you see the flag going up. And I don't like the national anthem, but Pomp and Circumstance, I think, should be it.
Part of Elgar's first Pomp and Circumstance March, Sir Malcolm Sargent conducting the London Symphony Orchestra. Gordon, where were you born?
In Yorkshire, Leeds. That's quite a long time ago now.
How early in your boyhood did you show promise as an athlete?
Well, my father, being an international runner and a secretary of this famous club, South London Harriers, always had running, you know, going in the family.
Yes.
And although I didn't really run seriously till the age of 11, we used to walk miles and miles in the Surrey Hills. Even when we were about 6, 5 even, we walked 20 miles on a Sunday.
Apart from your father, was there any other particular person who inspired you to want to get to the top?
Oh, a lot of people, but one in particular I'd mention, of course, Emil Zatopek. I saw him run in the Olympic Games after following his career at a distance in magazines, and he really inspired me to do something different.
You ran for the RAF during your national service. When did you first run for Britain?
1951. There's an amusing story looking back. I didn't know I was going to be chosen for Britain as a result of winning the national 6-mile championship, and I had a very large envelope turned up in the post one morning with a Britain vest. I was very surprised and proud of this. I used to stand in front of the mirror with it on before I went to work in the morning, and if anybody came up the stairs, I'd take it off very quickly.
What was your first world record?
6 miles world record in 1953.
How many have you held now?
5 altogether.
The 3,000 and the 5,000 metres, I know.
Yes, and 3,000 metres on another occasion.
Yes.
The 4 times 1,500 metres relay and the 6 mile, you said that. And another occasion, I nearly had a world record. I ran 22 and a quarter miles, but lost by 100 yards. That broke the existing record, actually for 20 miles as well.
Yes. How many of these records do you still have?
Oh, none. They've all disappeared. I think that's the routine with records.
When did you do your first 4-minute mile?
1960, immediately after the Olympic Games in Rome.
Yeah.
And I believe at the time of doing it, I was the oldest, the greatest age.
Yes. A mile, of course, is a sprint to you.
Yes, virtually. It's much too short.
Is there a psychological stimulus to record breaking? Nobody can break the 4-minute mile, and one person does it, and a lot of people can do it.
Well, I think the wrong picture has been painted with regard to this sudden revolution in running records. And I go back and say that a man like Zatopek and other influences started people into a completely new phase of training. That was to run every day, which was unheard of before 1948. And not only to run every day, but to run, say, 30 miles every day. And this brought about the sudden upsurge in record performances, one of which on the way was the 4-minute mile.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's have record number 3. What have you got next?
Well, Scandinavia and a friend of mine with a beard always remind me of Nina and Frederick. So I've chosen one of their records, By Mere Bis to Shame.
By mere bis to shame, please let me explain. By mere bis to shame means that you're grand. By mere bis to shame, again I'll explain. It means that you're the fairest in the land.
Nina and Frederick, By Mere Bis to Shame. Now, Gordon, you've represented Britain 3 times in the Olympic Games, always, of course, with the same double, the 5,000 metres and 10,000 metres. What is that, about 3 miles?
3 and 6 miles, yes.
Mm. Well, what happened at your first Olympics, the 1952 Games in Helsinki?
Well, I was a bit young. I ran myself sick and silly, trying to keep up with Zatopek.
Yes.
And second Olympic Games in Melbourne.
Get fourth in the 5,000 metres.
Yes, yes, I was fourth.
Well, that's nothing to be ashamed of, is it?
No, but one always hopes.
And at Melbourne, 56?
I had this tremendous duel, I think the hardest race of my career, with Vladimir Kutz, who one of us had to die, and I died with about less than a mile to go in the 6-mile race.
Yes.
And finished 10th, I think. And then I was second in the 5,000 metre race.
Yes, you came back with a silver medal.
Yes.
And 1960 in Rome, you came a bit unstuck.
Well, I think I was getting too old then. Or it was rather hot, I don't know which.
Well, you had a lot of rather pertinent things to say at that time about the handling of the team arrangements.
Well, I think the Rome Olympics were a tragedy for the British runners as a whole. That's in the middle distance and distance events. All of us should have reached the final, for example, in the 5,000 metres, but none of us could run anywhere near our best.
You hadn't had a chance to be acclimatised.
Well, we were there 3 days from about, I think it was about 58 degrees in London. When we arrived in Rome, it was 106 in the shade.
Wow. But in 1961, you decided that you'd like to turn professional.
Well, not really. I'd been running since a very, young, I mentioned 11. I was, I think, 20 years of running. And you have to call it a day sometime. Yes. And I'd written this book, Running Wild, which was due out, and if I hadn't turned pro, I would have been shot, as you call it.
You made the rather shattering remark, what's the difference? You've been a professional for years.
Oh, yes. I mean, I think back in 52, I went on a bus, you see, and the conductor said, I'm not taking your fare, you're Gordon Pirie. So that tuppence made me a professional.
Well, I want to ask you some questions about this, but let's have another record first. Let's have number 4.
Well, I have a lot of connections with Spanish civilization, the bull ring, and being in South America.
Your first professional race was in a bull ring, wasn't it?
Yes, that's a bit of a joke. But anyway, the record I've chosen always reminds me of this, and of course, Caterina Valenti is a wonderful performer. So I've chosen her singing, El Cumbanchero.
Caterina Valente with her brother Silvio, El Cumbanchero. Gordon, when you left school, what job did you take up?
Well, I went into Lloyd's Bank, which I think I had many enjoyable years with them.
Mm-hmm.
A very fine sports club. We had quite a good team there.
Yes, but you had to give up banking in order to run.
Well, I didn't need to because I did manage to run world records while I was in the bank.
Yes.
But I found it easier to do more running when I left the bank.
Mm-hmm. In other words, you were a top amateur athlete, competing all over the world. Your expenses were paid. But between meetings, how did you keep yourself? Did you have a private income?
No, I didn't. Well, I used to work and also I used to rough it, Shirley and myself, that is.
Yes.
And we've often camped out, slept in the back of the car, and, you know, when people at home have been saying, oh, they're having a wonderful time in Timbuktu or somewhere, there we'd be, you know. I can remember when we were in Norway on one occasion, we had this Norwegian fellow's big dog, a Riesenschnauzer, a sledge-pulling dog.
Mm.
We were knocking on the tradesman's entrance of the very posh hotel in Bergen, asking for food for the dog, and this very solemn butler came out with a silver tray and a tin of soup and bones for the dog.
So during your peak years, you weren't able to start any kind of professional career. You weren't able to advance yourself in your profession.
Well, not really at all. I look back and regret this, really. I had an opportunity to go to America on a scholarship, and I think I ought to have taken that opportunity. But although I've sacrificed a lot, I think I've gained more than I've given up.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, what are you up to now, Gordon? You have a scheme for getting fat stomachs off businessmen. What's all this about?
Well, that's putting it a bit crudely, actually. We have started an advisory service for business executives on fitness. I think this is a big problem nowadays.
Mm.
That's one of the activities I'm doing. I'm training athletes and tennis players, and I'm starting sports equipment business. And
you're very busy.
Yes.
But you're still keeping fit, you're still running a lot yourself.
Yes, well, when I'm training athletes, I believe in being able to run with them. And we actually run around Richmond Park, a big group of us, Sunday mornings for about 3 hours. Girls as well manage to do this.
Really? Where have we got to? Number five now.
Well, when I go to the cinema, you know, it's very uncomfortable with long legs. The only film I've ever watched through was The Tales of Hoffman. And I was so impressed I sat through it twice. And I've chosen the Barcarolle.
Barcarolle from The Tales of Hoffman, Georg Schulte conducting the orchestra of the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden. And what's number six?
Je ne regrette rien, Edith Piaf.
Why?
Well, this, I heard it so many times without knowing who it was singing it when I've been driving up and down the length of the continent. And to me, it brings back memories of, you know, driving around and being in France a lot and the continent in general. Car ma vie, car mes joies.
Non, je ne regrette rien, sung by Edith Piaf. How well equipped would you be as a castaway? Could you look after yourself all right?
Well, I haven't had a lot of training looking after myself, because Shirley looks after me pretty well.
Good.
I'm probably a little bit lazy in that respect.
But you wouldn't have Shirley here. Could you build a shelter of some kind?
Yes, I think I could build a shelter, but looking back again to Norway, this Sverre Fjellstad, this Norwegian chap, could sleep out in the forest in the snow and frost.
Really?
And I think merely you have to train your body again to become used to exposure.
Nature's own thermostat.
Yes, I think so.
Yes. Could you live off the land? Could you...
Yes, I think this would suit me admirably, because I prefer to have natural foods,
mm-hmm.
fruit and salads, I hope. I suppose I could get turtles' eggs on the beach and go fishing. Mind you, I've tried fishing a lot in Norway, and I only ever caught one fish about 4 inches long. I was so upset, I threw it back in.
Would you try to escape? Would you try to make a craft?
I don't think so, because I think the sharks... I've seen so many sharks in the Pacific, and I'd hate to be a leg less.
That's a nasty thought. Let's get back to music. What's number seven?
Well, I've got Petula Clark, a wonderful artist, I always think.
So do I.
Singing Shario.
Petula Clark, Shario. And now we come to your last one.
Well, you know, music, I feel, always brings out some mood. And I think this last record is one which should smooth you down after you've been racing around the island chasing, I don't know what there is to chase. And so I chose Clair de Lune by Debussy.
Yes. Would you like it on the piano or an orchestral transcription?
I like a lot of strings and different instruments. It gives more depth to the music.
Tchaikovsky conducting Debussy's Clair de Lune. If you could only take one of these eight records, which would it be?
I think the first one, The Very Thought of You, Maurice Paramore.
And one luxury to take with you?
That's a difficult question, of course, but I think motor cars, the luxury in civilised living that I would miss. I'd like to take one, have it on a plinth on the island. then I could remember the terrible traffic jams that I'm missing.
And one book to take with you?
I'd like to take something that demands a lot of concentration and attention. My choice would be Gray's Anatomy.
So that you could learn how the body works?
Yes, and it would last an awful long time.
Right. Well, thank you, Gordon Pirie, for letting us hear your choice of Desert Island Discs.
Well, thank you for having me.
Goodbye, everyone.
The guest in today's recorded programme was Gordon Pirie, the interviewer Roy Plumley, and the producer Monica Chapman.